worthwhile to ask questions in the middle. Okay, now, of course, we actually go through the shiur every year, the shiur of how to kasher the kitchen. This year might be a little bit different because, firstly, a lot of people are doing it who haven't perhaps not done it before. Additionally, we might need some coolers because not everybody has all the various utensils. And it's very easy to say, you know, in a regular year, buy everything new and get everything Pesach dik and, you know, just go out and buy. But today, much harder to buy stuff, and we might have to rely on some coolers. So if we understand just a little bit the concepts a little bit beforehand, and then we can see what we can rely on, what coolers we can rely on. So today I would like to discuss specifically how to clean the house for Pesach. It's going to be very much practical halach lemaisa. That's the focus of this year. Tomorrow I'd like to focus a little bit more on the practical aspects of kashering, not the kitchen and getting ready for the house for Pesach, but rather hagolas kelim, bechers and cutlery that people need to do, exactly all the details, as well as tvilas kelim, how to toivel stuff, as well as you know, what you can buy you know, without kashla Pesach hechsher. Some people, a lot of people have been asking me that, you know, what you can go and buy, what you have to be careful for, what you don't, medicines and stuff like that. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. There's two aspects that one needs to know when you clean your house for Pesach. The first aspect is that, the two aspects when cleaning the house for Pesach. The first aspect is that you cannot have any real chametz in the house. Meaning, unless you're selling the chametz, you cannot have any chametz lying around in your house. Bali ro, bali motze means you can't see it and you can't be in your possession. You have to get rid of the chametz. Now, the only chametz you really have to get rid of are chametz which bittul does not help, where I cannot be mevatel it. For example, if I have a bag of pretzels, I'm not going to be mevatel that, because even if I say kol chamiro vechamiro diko bishusi and I'm mevatel that chametz, it doesn't really help because you're not sure, you don't want to be mevatel something. It's a good bag of pretzels. It doesn't really work. So anything which is not a crumb or something substantial, bittul doesn't help, and you have to get rid of that. What does that mean in practical purposes? It does not mean you have to go through your entire house and clean up everything and go crazy and go meshuggah. You just have to look, where is that bag of pretzel in my kid's bedroom, in their backpack, you know, or in their closet? That's it. I don't have to look for every crumb in the house. Every crumb, I can be mevatel. In other words, if I just vacuum the floor, I look in the backpacks, I look in the drawers, I don't find any bags of pretzels, any real chametz, that's fine. It shouldn't take more than one day to do the entire house. That's it. You don't have to go meshuggah, you don't have to go crazy, you don't have to make a spring cleaning entire house, nothing. The chametz is gone out of, any real chametz is gone. Whatever I do not find and I do not see while looking for the chametz while I'm cleaning the house regularly, that's all going to be bottled, because obviously a tiny little crumb or a half a pretzel, that's all bottled, that doesn't count. So that's really what you have to do insofar in cleaning the house. You don't have to go, people start opening up their vents, air conditioning vents on the floor and the bottom to make sure there's no crumb over there. You're not going to see that. You're mevatel that. There's no real chametz there to begin with. Even if there's a crumb of bread fell through, so there's a crumb. It's batel. It doesn't make a difference. The same thing underneath the fridge. You're mechuyif to take away the fridge. Why are you mechuyif to take away the fridge? Even if there's chametz over there, I'm never getting to it. I'm mevatel it. It's disgusting. It's underneath the fridge. It's sitting there for who knows how long. You don't have to go and make yourself meshuggah on anything when it comes to chametz in the house. Yes, you have to look. Yes, you should be looking through your kids' school bags, because that's where chametz is usually found. You should be looking in your kid's drawer next to his bed, because that's where he keeps his nash and his candy and his pretzels and his wafers. Of course, that's real chametz. You got to look through that. Now, who has to look through that, really? The chiyav achrayas, the responsibility, is the man's responsibility. by bedikas chametz, that's your job. Your job by bedikas chametz is to look, not for the 10 symbolic pieces. Don't say anywhere in the Gemara you have to put out 10 symbolic pieces. It's an old minhag, 100%. But you have to look for chametz. So it's the man's job to look for chametz through the house on bedikas chametz. Not a bedikas chametz, not a game looking for 10 pieces. You got to look for chametz, and that's your job. Your wife wants to be so nice and so caring. Says, you know what? I'll make your job easier. I'm going to make sure I vacuum the whole house. Everything is done and make it easier for you. Fine. That's her right. But at the end of the day, it's the man's responsibility during bedikas chametz to look for the big pieces of chametz. That's your job. And therefore, more than that does not need to be done the entire time. Make it very clear. Don't have to make meshuggah. You have to go crazy. And if you have a whole closet that's full of chametz, you say, oh my gosh, how am I going to get rid of it? You know what? Everybody's stuck in a home. It's hard to get rid of it altogether. You can put it in the garbage. It's difficult. You start going through everything. Forget it. You can just lock up the whole closet. Say, I'm selling the whole closet, the whole chametz. I'm selling it to the guy. And that's it. You can do that. Now, that's the first aspect. The first aspect is that you can't have any chametz be'en. If you look on the sheet, you can't have any real chametz. The sheet is not actually, it's not Mar Mekoyim, it's just what we're going to go through tonight. So you can't have any real pieces of chametz anywhere in the house. That's the first part. For sure, you should not have any real pieces of chametz on my pots and pans that I'm going to be using on Pesach. Well, I usually have Pesach tikka pans and pots and pans, and there's no problem. In my oven, I shouldn't have any real piece of chametz. Obviously not. On my stovetop, I shouldn't have any real piece of chametz. For sure not. Clearly, kitchen is included, that you can't have any real chametz. Then there's something else. That even though I get rid of all the real chametz, and there's no chametz anywhere that I know of, any big pieces of chametz, and the rest is batel, there's such a thing as blias of chametz, which means that even though the chametz is not here anymore, but it got absorbed into my cooking utensils. It got absorbed into my sink. It got absorbed into my countertops. It got absorbed into my oven. It got absorbed into the walls of the items that are used for food preparation. Even though, technically speaking, it's not here anymore because there's no chametz over here, but it's called a blia of chametz. It's called an absorption of chametz. And therefore, if I want to use that food item on that food material on Pesach in order to cook with that same food material, that food preparatory item on Pesach, I want to use the oven, I want to use the sink, I want to use the countertop, I want to use the pot and pans, I want to use the fridge, I want to use the same items that are going to come into contact with food, then there's such a concept that by using the same items, the same utensils, the chametz that was absorbed inside the walls of the utensil will get expelled while I'm using it on Pesach. And that's a problem. That's a problem on Pesach, because on Pesach, even if it's not bar not liv gam, which means even if it was washed in between and it wasn't used 24 hours, and when it comes to other things, we say, b'dieved, it's all okay, it's all batel, it's all fine. On Pesach, it's not okay. On Pesach, any chametz dikah, pot or pan or oven or countertop or sink that ever absorbed any type of chametz into that utensil, then on Pesach, it comes back out by using that utensil again, and therefore, my food will become chametz dik, and I cannot eat that food. And therefore, besides the first aspect, which is getting rid of the real piece of chametz, there's a second aspect, which is I have to kasher the kalim. I have to kasher all the utensils, which is going to be used in preparing my Pesach food. And if I don't kasher that, then the food that I'm eating is chametz. Even if it's after 24 hours, and even if it's soapy and it was cleaned, it doesn't make a difference. At the end of the day, my food will become chametz. And therefore, the most important part of getting ready for Pesach, the only real important part, and that's really the real achrayus, is the kitchen itself. The kitchen with all its utensils that are made to prepare the food, that has to not just be cleaned thoroughly, but that has to be kashered. You have to expel all the chametz from these items. You have to expel all the chametz from these items. Otherwise, you cannot use them on Pesach. Now, I'm going to start a little backwards. In other words, the only time the blius, the taste, the absorbed taste of the items get expelled on Pesach is only if heat has been applied. If it's done through a medium of heat or liquid, hot liquid or heat, that's where we say that the taste inside the item gets back expelled into the food. And therefore, where there is no heat whatsoever at all, as long as it's cleaned, you don't need to kosher it, and you don't even need to cover it. For example, my closets in the kitchen, where my drawers and my closets, where I put my Pesach Dikah utensils or my Pesach Dikah food, I put inside my closets. Do I have to kosher the closets? Of course not, because my food goes in cold. Even if it goes in uncovered, it goes in cold. And therefore, do I have to clean my closets? Yes, I don't want to have a crumb there. Even a crumb I really don't want, because I don't want to put my Pesach cake on the in the drawer and to absorb and take along with it, schlep along with it, a crumb. But if there's no crumbs there and it's cleaned, then you don't have to do anything else. And therefore, technically speaking, you don't really need to line your closets. You don't need to line your closets. You never put real food inside a closet. What do I put in? I put in sometimes a cup. Okay, I make sure there's no crumb of chametz there. I clean it beforehand. I don't need to line my closets. Even my fridges, I don't need to really line. Why? Because my fridge is cold. Now, by the way, if I end up putting a hot pot inside, hot Pesach Dikah pot inside my fridge, then we say, oh well, if I put a hot pot in my fridge and I put it on a unlined part of the fridge that has not been lined with anything, though it was cleaned, it might absorb the chametz from the shelf of the fridge. So it would make sense to at least either line the fridge or put some silver foil over there or put some paper towels over there whenever you put something inside. But technically speaking, if you're not going to put a hot pot inside the fridge, you don't even need to line the fridge. If I'm never on Pesach, I'm never putting a hot pot inside the fridge, then why do I have to line the fridge? It's a nice thing to do, for sure. My mother did it like that. My grandmother did it like that, for sure. But this year, when I can't go find contact paper, I can't go find any liners, so what am I going to do? My fridge is not kosher Pesach? Of course it is. If I make sure it's clean and there's no chametz, there's no chametz in my fridge at all, then I don't have to line my fridge as long as I'm careful that on Pesach, I don't take a hot pot or hot food and put it directly in the fridge. As long as it's cooled down, it's less than 110 degrees, then if I put it inside the fridge, it'll never absorb from the hidden taste, the blius inside the frigidaire. And therefore, technically speaking, I don't need to line my fridge. I definitely don't need to line my closets. I could. It's a nice thing. It's a nice thing to line the drawers. People have contact paper. They keep from year to year. That's fantastic. That's great. If I don't have, could I make Pesach? 100%. As long as I make sure that there's no real chametz in my closet, there's no chametz in my fridge, it's cleaned out, cleaned, and I scrubbed it and make sure there's no chametz there, there's no remnants of chametz, then I don't need to line it. Could I line it? 100%. Is it a good thing to line? For sure. Do I have to if I don't have? No, I don't. Again, because it's not going to absorb any of the hidden tastes, the blios inside the shelves from the shelves of the fridge or from the shelves of my closet or of my drawer. That is regarding the closets and the fridge and the stuff like that. Anybody has any questions on just this part?
I have a question about benchers.
Yes.
If everything you said before about crumbs, why do we have to get rid of our benchers?
You don't.
Because we have a thing.
You put it in the closet. Oh, no. You don't want to use the same benches on your Pesach Dika table, and I'll tell you the reason why. Because if you take your benches and you put it on the Pesach Dika table, and I open my bencher to his mirrors that I barely use, and there's a crumb over there, and it falls on my table in my plate, and then I eat it, I just ate chametz on Pesach. That's not a good thing. But do I should not use the same benches from the whole year because it's full of crumbs. But do I have to go through every single bench to make sure there's no crumbs? No. I put it away, I'm mevatel it, and that's it. And I'm not sure if you should tell it to a guy. Does a guy want your crumbs on your benches? Why should he? That doesn't make sense. You mevatel it. That's what bittel helps.
Got it.
Could you elaborate a little bit on having chametz, mamash ben, like cereals, macaroni, mamash chametz, in the house, in the closet, and you close the closet,
right? And you sell that to the guy,
of course. Is that l'chatchila or b'di'evet?
It's l'chatchila. No problem with that. You should not have it open in front of you. You should be closed and locked away, but you can sell chametz gomer. There are people who are machmir not to sell chametz gomer. If that's your minik, by all means. We went through that once.
No, I'm usually never home for Pesach, usually. Okay. So I sell the whole house.
So you also sell those. So what's the difference if you sell the whole house every year full of chametz? Or you sell a closet over here full of chametz? The same thing?
I understand. But since I don't live here, I'm not in the house. So I'm selling the whole house with all its contents.
And what's out of mind is out of sight.
No. It's less of a haroma.
It's less of a haroma. It's the same haroma on the mechira. And if you put a big X in front of the closet that it's not yours, it belongs to the guy, then that's the same thing.
Okay.
That's the same thing. Okay. Any questions on this? Or we're good?
Yes. Yeah, one question.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Rabbi Rabag. The automated ice maker in your freezer.
Yes. So again, you can definitely use that. That's a good example. But that's smart to empty out all the ice. And the reason is only because many times you take your hands, which have crumbs from challah, and you put your hands in there because you don't want to use the automated machine on Shabbos. And there's crumbs over there. You don't want crumbs coming into your food on Pesach, obviously. But if it's cleaned out, then why can't you use the automated ice machine? It's clean. It's only ice. There's no problem in that.
Do we line the bucket and the handle?
If you cleaned it well, there's no reason to line it.
Okay, amazing.
If there's no chametz there, yes. If you deny, if there's a crumb of chametz there, that's no good. That goes into your food. That's the reason why people don't use it. But if you know it's clean, there's nothing there, then it's fine.
Thank you.
Okay, so now let's start.
One last thing.
Yes.
What about the handles and the faucets and the...
We're gonna get to all that. I'm just gave you an example of the liner in the fridge and the other ones and the closet. Okay, so now when it comes to kashering, when it comes to other aspects, which is the pots and the pans and the ovens and the dishwasher and the countertops and the sinks and all the places where food comes into contact with these items, either directly with food onto these utensils or through another pot that comes into contact, a pot of food that comes into contact with these utensils. So we have to get rid of not just the actual chametz, but you have to get rid of the blias, the absorptions of chametz. You have to expel the chametz that are in these items. How do you expel the chametz in these items? So the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Tov Nun Aleph basically says in Sifei that it depends how the items were used. In other words, if the items kelim shenishtamish behem bechamin kfi tashmishon hechsheron, you kasher it kfi tashmishon, the way it was used, or in halach it's called keboiloi kach poltoi, which means if something was used directly on the fire, so the only way you expel, in other words, the chametz got absorbed directly through fire. For example, an oven, the chametz gets directly absorbed during the year through fire, through the medium of fire. The only way you can use that oven on Pesach is by expelling the chametz in the walls of the oven through fire. Keboiloi kach poltoi. The way it gets absorbed, that's the way it needs to be expelled. something, says the Shulchan Aruch, something which was only done through klirishoin, which is through water, cooked through water, then the way you get rid of it is through hagala, which is through getting rid of it through bubbling, boiling hot water. Something which is absorbed through irui. It doesn't even sit on the fire, and it doesn't get absorbed through water through a cooking process, but only gets poured into this item. For example, a classic case is a sink, a stainless steel sink. So any chametz that goes in there, right, only gets into the sink by pouring, right? I take a pot of noodle soup and I pour it down the sink, so it's not cooking inside the sink. It's being poured from a pot which was cooking on the fire. It's being poured into the sink. And hence, the way you get rid of that chametz from the sink is also enough through pouring. You don't have to actually cook the sink to get rid of the chametz with hot water, but you can just pour it. That's good enough. And that's his concept of kaboiloi kachpoltoi. You have to always see how was the chametz absorbed into this item, and the same way it needs to be expelled. That's the first halacha. A second halacha, yes.
Does it need me expiase? Does it need me expiase?
Wait, we didn't get to anything yet. Avram, let's first go to the concepts. Okay. That's the first concept. The second concept is, the Shulchan Aruch continues in Sivov, that the Mechaber says, every utensil you have to follow lefi roiv tashmishoi, how it's usually, how does it usually get absorbed, the chametz? Which means, in an oven, right, 99% time, all the time, it gets absorbed through fire. That's correct. On a stovetop or in a pot, it always gets absorbed, the pot, the chametz gets absorbed in the pot, through, not through fire, through the liquid, through the medium of water. That's a clear rishon. In other words, the chametz sits in the water and that gets into the pot through the water. So that's the way it gets absorbed. But let's say on a sink, for example, so most of the time it gets absorbed into the sink through pouring. That's called irui. It gets absorbed in the sink through pouring. But sometimes I have a hot piece of chametz that sits in the sink. So that's not exactly pouring. The chametz itself sits in the sink. It doesn't just get poured. So some say that's called the fire itself. So how do you base it on? So the Mechaber says you follow roiv tashmishon. You follow how it's usually absorbed, and that's enough. If you expel it the way it's usually absorbed, that's good enough. Says the Ramah, no, we disagree. And Ashkenazim say even miut tashmishon, which means, for example, if I have a glasses, and most of the time I only use it for cold water, not a big deal. And once in a while, I'll put it inside a dishwasher and I'll wash it with boiling hot water. So most of the time, the chametz gets into the glass cold. Doesn't really have absorption at all. Every now and then, there's chametz in the dishwasher that gets inside the glass, you know, through hot water. So how do I kasher that? Says the Ramah, you're supposed to kasher. I agree with the Mechaber, the Me'ikar Adin, Reif Tashmishon is good enough. But we're machmir on Pesach as a chumrah that any type of, if it ever got absorbed through any type of way, then you have to always be machmir to the most stringent way in order to kasher the kelim. And therefore, he says glasses, for example, that most of the time is used for colds, and therefore there's no absorption at all, and once in a while it's used for hot chametz, then you have to really kasher that through heat as well. And you can't just say, well, it's only used for cold most of the time. You follow even miut tashmishon, even if it's used some of the time, you have to kasher that accordingly. But only as a chumrah, says the Ramah, me'ikar adin b'di'evet, if you kasher it the way it's usually used, it's also good enough. Okay. So what does that mean, halach lemaisa? So what does it mean? How does it translate for us in kashering all the utensils in the kitchen? So let's start one by one. The first one is, and we'll understand the concepts as we go through it. The first one is the oven. Okay, the oven is the easiest. The oven, it gets absorbed, the chametz gets absorbed in the oven through fire, right? It gets heat, fire gets directly absorbed into the oven. And therefore, how do you kasher this oven? If you want to use the oven on Pesach, you need what's called libun chamur. You have to fire up that oven and you have to have like a blowtorch, libun chomer, which means the Gemara says that nitzoytziyet yoytzi misham, that red sparks come out of it when you kasher it. You know, you use a blowtorch. The olden days used to use a blowtorch, and you blow up, you fire up the entire oven. Every part has to be kashered and has to be heated to that degree that sparks fly on the metal by heating up. You're heating it up to a glow. That's how you have to kasher the oven. How do you do that? So today, Baruch Hashem, the olden days, I remember as a child, so we used to have somebody come to the house with a blowtorch and used to spend 2 hours, literally, every corner of the oven, going to every part of the oven, blowtorching the entire oven. Otherwise, you couldn't kasher it. Today, we have what's called a self-cleaning oven. The self-cleaning oven, according to all the poskim, is called libun chamur. Libun chamur means that you put it to self-clean cycle, the four-hour cycle, and it burns it out to 900 degrees. It's libun chamur. The entire oven is kashered. The advantage of libun chamur is you don't even have to clean it beforehand, because the oven incinerates everything in its midst. Libun chamur, it's such a good self-cleaning method, it incinerates everything. So you don't have to clean the oven. You should clean behind the door, because there the glass, and behind the door, because there the self-heating mechanism doesn't really get to. So the glass should be cleaned well with Easy Off and behind the door and all that stuff. But once you do that, you close the oven, you put on self-clean cycle, and the entire thing is libun chamur. It's completely kashered. There's no question. Lechatchila, all the chumras, that's fine. Now, if somebody does not have a self-cleaning oven, right? Is there anybody here that does not have a self-cleaning oven? Or there's no reason? Okay, somebody that does not have a self-cleaning oven. So how do you, if you can't self-clean, how are you supposed to kasher the oven? So the truth is, there's a machlokes between Reb Moshe Feinstein and Reb Aaron Cutler. Reb Moshe Feinstein says, no. You don't have a self-cleaning oven, too bad. You need libun chamur. You need to get a blowtorch. You got to blowtorch the entire oven. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Reb Aaron Cutler, who was no slouch, Reb Aaron Cutler, the Gal Hadar, though he wasn't a poysek like Reb Moshe Feinstein was, but he was the biggest Rosh Hashiva, the biggest gadol in America. Reb Aaron Cutler held, and therefore in Lakewood they hold like that, and many, many poysekim hold like that, that libun kal is also good enough. Which means that, again, since what are you really kashering? The cavity of the oven. So no food, it's not like in the olden days when they would take a bread and stick it on the wall of the oven. Today we don't do that. Nobody takes bread and sticks it at the wall of the oven. You put it on a pan which is sitting on the grate. So what are you really kashering? Only the zeya, the taste, or the steam that goes in the cavity of the oven. Says Reb Aaron Cutler, you don't need libun chamur. Libun kal is also good enough. A lighter form of burning out and torching it out is also good enough. What is libun kal? Says Reb Aaron, in other words, the way you do it is in there, you have to wait 24 hours, meaning from the last usage. You clean it out very well with Easy Off, and you scrub out all the pieces of chametz, not just pieces of chametz, but all the grease you try and clean out very well in the oven. And you go through it a second time, you know, the hard to stain, the stains that don't come out, that's fine. But at the end of the day, you clean it well with Easy Off in all the corners and behind and everything like that. You turn the oven to the, and the grates as well, obviously, or the racks. You turn the oven to 550 degrees, which is the highest temperature that the oven goes, for about half an hour after it reaches the temperature. So it's about 45 minutes to an hour. You put it on to the highest temperature. That's called libun kal. And then you kashered your oven, and that's good enough. Now, should you be careful not to take a piece of meat on Pesach and put it directly on the racks without even putting it in a pan? Yeah, you should be careful, because the racks themselves were never really kasher with libun chamur. But nobody does that anyway. And if you do that on a weekday, you broil your steak directly on the racks, then don't do that on Pesach. Make sure you always put it inside a pan onto the racks so that you're not touching anything specifically in the oven. But libun kal would work as well, and you can kasher your oven in such a way. Any questions on the ovens? Now, there's other types of ovens. One second. There's continuous clean ovens, and there's convection ovens, and stuff like that. Before we get to microwave, any questions on these ovens? Anybody doesn't have either a regular oven or a self-cleaning oven.
Rav, on the self-cleaning ovens, do you have to put the racks in as well during the self-cleaning process?
Yes, why not?
No, I turned off the video. And
why not? You can. You should. Why not? Then you caution
because it completely. Because in some of the self-cleaning modes, they tell you not to put it because it ruins the racks.
Right, right. I know they say that. So if you're worried about that, take off the racks, but then you have to clean the racks, and then you have to put the racks inside and do a libun kal on the racks, which means after you self-clean the oven, then you take the racks, put them inside, put the oven on for 550 degrees, and then your racks are libun kal, and you kashered it that way.
Can I use the self clean which is libun chamor?
Yes.
Can I use that to be malaben also?
You're jumping ahead.
Okay.
Lat. Okay. Any questions on that? Okay. Now regarding a microwave oven. Microwave is even funnier because a microwave is no real heat, but it still gets hot, but it's not really done through fire. So how do you kasher a microwave? So again, the concept would be kaboiloi kachpoltoi. Now, microwave, there's two types of microwaves, and all the books say that. I'm just repeating what it says. I'm by no means an expert on the mechanical aspects of these things, but microwave ovens, they say if you cook, let's say, if the first check, does the oven actually, the walls of the oven actually get hot? If the walls of the oven actually get hot, of the microwave oven, then you need libun kal, at least, to kasher the oven. And you cannot reach libun kal in a microwave oven, and therefore you cannot kasher it. The way to check it is bake a potato in the oven, and right after 15 minutes, right after you finish baking the potato, put your hands on the wall of the oven and see if you can leave the hands there for 10, 15 seconds. If you can, then the walls did not get hot, and you can kasher that oven. If you cannot keep your hands there, then the walls got too hot, more than Yatza Lettuce Boy, and hence you cannot kasher your microwave because the walls got hot and you need libun and you cannot do libun. From what my experience is that most microwaves, the walls actually do not get hot. So therefore, after you take this test, then you know that your microwave is kasherable because the walls do not get hot. Then what you need to do is make sure the microwave has not been used 24 hours, has been cleaned, or clean it with soap, whatever you need to clean it with. And then you put a cup of water inside the microwave and let it boil out for 20 seconds. Because since it didn't get absorbed through heat, just through steam, so then you can expel the chametz in the walls of the microwave through steam as well. So you put a cup of water inside the microwave, let it boil out for 20 minutes, after it was cleaned and did not use it for 24 hours, and hence your microwave is kashered. That's going to help for the cavity of the microwave. However, for the, what's the thing on the bottom called? The glass where the food sits on top and the food spills on top, that you have to kasher it and you can't really kasher that. Glass is questionable if you kasher that. And therefore, really what you should use is one of these, and the turntable, get a styrofoam for the week of Pesach, get a styrofoam type of plate and use that instead of the glass turntable. And that's what you put your food on. But the glass
turntable. Or don't have a turntable. So you don't have a turntable.
Or you don't have to have a turntable altogether. Correct. You don't have to have a turntable. You just put the food in directly. Correct. But even then, if you always don't use a turntable, then the walls actually got food splattered on top of that. So that's not good either. So I would say probably always put something between your dish and the microwave floor. Always put a piece of paper on Pesach in between. That's if you kasher your microwave. Any questions on the microwave or are we good? Okay, let's go to the next part. The range, the stovetop. Okay, so the stovetop, there's four parts to the stovetop. There's the burners, there's the grates, there's the area in between the burners, and then there's the knobs and stuff like that. So the burners themselves just need to be cleaned. You put it on for 10 minutes. They burn themselves out. There's never any food over there. It gets burnt out. There's no problem. You don't have to kasher the burners themselves. As long as it's cleaned, you put it on for 10 minutes and you put on the fire. It burns itself out. There's no problem. The grates is much more of a problem because the grates, the chametz dikapat, sits on top the entire year. And therefore, the taste of the chametz dikapat, if there ever was any type of liquid spilling from the pot onto the grates, so it connected, so then the hot liquid came as irui, or even more, the pot itself, the hot pot, sat on top of the grate, and it got absorbed, the chametz got absorbed through the pot into the grates. You have to expel the chametz from the grates. So how do you do that? So the two ways to do it. The best way is, and that's the easiest way, and I do it every year. People don't like to hear it, but that's the easiest, is I take those grates and I put them in my self-cleaning oven when I self-clean the oven. With the result, I did libun chamur on my grates. Big grates, libun chamur, fantastic. Yeah, it becomes a little bit white from burning out all the grease and everything like that. But it's even easier. I don't have to clean the grates. I put it in the oven, self-clean it. It gets a little white after two or three usages. It goes back, then it becomes its regular color again. That's the easiest. That's the best. People don't like to do that. They say there's rubber on it, and it gets ruined, and et cetera, et cetera. So if you're not going to do libun chamur on the grates, but it does need some type of libun, then at least you should do libun kal on the grates, and that's perfectly legit as well. What's libun kal? Libun kal means is that you have to wait, clean the grates first, with easy off, make sure there's no chametz on the grates, there's no nothing that can come off, any grease that can come off on the grates. Then you have to burn it out. Now, how do you burn it out? Now, just to turn on the fire, that's not going to do much. Because especially today, when you have these grates that cover the entire stovetop area, you don't have these old-fashioned, you know, the grates on top of each burner. But you have the grates covering the whole area, two big grates, and you just slide the pot all over. So every part needs to be kashered with libun, at least libun kal. Because you move your pot all over the stovetop grates. So how do you kasher those grates that it gets libun on every part of the grates? So the best way is put in the self-cleaning oven. You don't want to do that, then make sure you clean it, wait 24 hours, and then you take either a blech, if you want, a metal plate. If you don't have a blech, take silver foil and triple over silver foil on a section, on a quarter section of this stovetop. And you turn on one fire, one, only one, to the highest. So the result is, you do that for about 15, 20 minutes. The result is that the fire goes into the aluminum foil plate or the aluminum foil rectangular area, and it spreads out to wherever the aluminum foil, every part of the grate that the aluminum foil will cover, or the blech, or the big pot, for example, will cover. And you do that first in one quarter. Then you close the fire, do it on the second quarter, then on the third quarter, and then on the fourth quarter. If you do it one by one, then you don't cause a fire. You just turn on the fire, each fire by itself, with the result that the fire goes and spreads on all areas of the grate, and you did libun kal on your grates. Any question on how to kasher the grates?
I have a question.
Yes.
You don't have to wait any, there's no like waiting time before you do that.
I just said 24 hours from the time you used it last.
Oh, okay, fine. I missed that.
Yeah, if you do libun kal, if you do libun chamur, you don't have to.
Oh.
If you put in the self-cleaning oven, you don't have to do anything. You
don't have to wait. Okay.
Okay. So that's on the grates.
Okay. Yes. Okay, on the grates, if you have the four separate grates,
yes.
The older version. So do you do it the same way? Do they still need the libun kal?
They still need a libun kal, yes. But it's much easier because all you need to do is you put something covering that grate. It can even be a pot, by the way. It can even be a chametz dikah pot that you haven't used 24 hours. Put some water in it and you cook something for 20 minutes. So the fire spreads through the pot over that whole grate.
Is there a third option, Rabbi?
What was that?
Is there a third option if the first two don't work for your...
What's wrong with those two options?
The first one, it ruins the grates.
Got it.
One, it burns out our burner. We've had to have a guy come fix all our stuff.
What do you mean it burns out your burner?
There's like a mechanism that turns the flame on, you know, the igniter.
Why? Because it's so hot. It's so hot that it burns out the burner.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll give you a third option. The third option is take your grate and put your grate in an oven at 550 degrees. Libun kal.
For how long?
You know, for, but there has to be for about 45 minutes. The same way you do the racks of the oven, do it in the what's the name? Put in a regular oven, but you have to clean it well, put in a regular oven for about 45 minutes, and then you cash it out your grates. And then, of course, there's the fourth option where you turn on to the highest without anything over it. But it only, wherever the fire goes, it's kashered. And the rest of the part, you cover with silver foil, like your parents and grandparents used to do. That always works. But nobody wants to do that. But that also works, because that's what they did. They did all these tricks. They said, okay, wherever the fire goes, it's kashered. The rest of the part, I cover with silver foil, and I can move my pot around. So those are the four options that you have regarding the grates.
If you use a blech, does it matter if it's a chametz blech or a pesachtik blech?
If it's not used for 24 hours and there's no real chametz, like be'en, you know, something you can just take off, kind of, it doesn't make a difference.
Okay.
Okay? Okay. That's regarding the grates.
Sorry, yeah. One more question. The answer that you just gave to Jeff about the blech, that's for Pesach or for this particular cleaning of the grates? Was that like a blanket statement for the whole Pesach that you could use a blech?
What do you mean? No, not for the whole Pesach. For the whole Pesach, you cannot use a blech. I'm kidding, for kashering it.
Well, that's what I was asking. Okay, thank you.
We'll discuss what to do for Pesach, for Shabbos, what blech to use and what we can do for that. Okay, now the area in between the grates, should really, if you have stainless steel, then you can kasher it with boiling hot water, like you kasher everything else in your kitchen with bubbling hot water. I don't really recommend it because you get water over there and then it messes up the electronic. It's not so comfortable. I feel much more comfortable cleaning it and then putting some silver foil between the burners. It's not really such a problem. You know, today they even sell, if you don't want to use it, they sell the things that go around the burners, these round silver foil things that sit, the plates that fit around it. If you don't have, you don't want to go to the store, then use some silver foil. Remember, this year, you're not going to have any guests. Nobody's walking into your kitchen. Doesn't really make a difference. It could be silver foil, lo nara, not the end of the world. The reason why it should be covered is, again, because if something connects, something spills on that area and you did not kasher it, then we say it connects and it absorbs from the chametz dika area between the burners, which was never kashered, and then would go with connect directly into your pot, and that would make your food bleus, absorbing the chametz from the area between the burners, and therefore that really should be covered or kashered. Any questions?
So that's in addition. That's in addition to running the burner for 20 minutes.
Yeah, because that has nothing to do with that. The burner is just on the actual burner itself, the round pieces. The round pieces, even 10 minutes is enough because everything gets burnt there right away. There's no problem. That's not going to help you. Running the burner is not going to help you in the area between burner and burner. So the area between burner and burner, if it's not covered or kashered and you put a pot there on Pesach and something drips out of the pot and it connects, so we say that it's considered one big connection from the bottom of the stove, from the area, surface area of the stovetop, directly into your pot. That's no good. So therefore, either it needs to be kashered or kashered with water, or it can. That's if it's stainless steel. If it's not stainless steel, if it's enamel, then it just has to be covered.
Are you going to get to shortly glass covered stoves?
Oh, so the glass covered stoves. Itzi, besides you, who has glass covered stoves? Glass top stovetops.
Yeah, we have, when you say glass top, is that an electric top?
So there's difference. They have a smooth glass top with the coils underneath, and then they have a glass top with an electric raised electric burner on top of that. You understand the two different types?
No, we don't have that. We have the first one.
Yeah, same.
But it's a smooth glass top.
What do you mean smooth glass top? Is it one smooth glass top, or is the you have a smooth glass top and on top of that you have an electric burner sitting on top of it?
Smooth glass top, underneath the glass is electric coils.
Electric coils. You have
not
the same
induction.
Thing?
Yeah, we have the same thing.
Yeah. So that's a little problematic, how to kasher that. Very problematic, actually, because If you're Svardi, Miss Saidi, much better for you. If you're Svardi, the Mechaba says, no problem, glass doesn't have to be kashert. So I would just say, turn it to the highest. Under the coil is for sure good. Because you see, there's a question if glass can be kashered or not. The Mechaba says that klicheres, which is earthenware, cannot be kashered. And the question is glass like earthenware because it comes from the earth, it's made from sand, or is it not like earthenware? So the Mechaba says that glass is not like earthenware, and therefore glass doesn't even have to be kashered. And therefore, if you're Svardi, there's no problem. You want to kasher the area of the burner, you put the burner on to the highest for about 20 minutes, you make sure everything is clean, you put your pots on top, you can move your pots, slide them any way you want, because glass, according to the Mechaba, is not barleya. It doesn't have to be kashered because it doesn't absorb anything. So Miss Sahidi, you're good. We'll speak to each other after okay. The shiur tomorrow. However, Itzi, you have a little bit of a problem because you're an Ashkenazi, yes. I know. Yeah, you're an Ashkenazi. And Ashkenazi Ramot says that glass is boileya, it absorbs, and it cannot be kashert because glass is like earthenware, it cannot be kashert. So you have a problem because you're going to... So the Kiveiga says that if you do libun on the glass, it's going to work. So if you do libun on the glass, which is the area where the actual coil is... So you can clean that well, put it on to the highest, right, for 20 minutes, and the area where the coils extend to, that's kashert, but not further. How are you going to move your pot past?
I don't think the other areas get hot.
But that's a problem. But then if you put your hot pot on the other areas, and time Chometzdik, it was the hot pot in one area, you got a problem. So it's a major problem. Even if you want to rely on Reb Kiva Eiger and you say that, you know what, the area where the coils go actually get kashered because that gets burnt out, and Libun Chomer helps, even according to the Ramah, it helps, but not past where the coils go. Itzi, how are you going to kasher that? So the best thing would be to cover that. But they say that if you cover it, you're going to crack your glass because there's so much heat and the heat doesn't escape. So the area which is covered gets cracked. So they're not really sure what to do. So to throw hot water on it also doesn't really work because you need libun. So some people, my brother-in-law in Lakewood says, maybe there's a heter that if you put the same thing you do over the grates, you'd put a silver foil and you'd kasher, put the coil onto the top to the fullest and then extend all the way out because the heat would expand all over, then maybe that would work also. But A, you might end up cracking your glass. And other place can say, I heard a shiur actually, Rabbi Kleinman said, yes, Shul Kamnetsky, he says, I can't really kasher that. And then he went to ask somebody in Netzol. He also told me he can't really kasher that. So it's not so easy. I have maybe a solution for you, Itzi. But talk to me after this year, and I'll give you a solution for what you can do this year.
Okay, does it involve switching party affiliations to becoming a Sparty?
It doesn't work like that, but okay. Anyway, but that's the issue with glass. But besides what
is the solution? Because if I'm a guest somewhere, you know, my daughter, for instance, and she has
Everybody has a different solution. You won't like this solution. Some people, what they do is that they only cook they only use small pots to cook within the where the coils are. That's one solution. Somebody else in the shul actually told me what he used to do, and that's where you saw other people do it. They cook with like a little trivet. They put little coins on top of the smooth glass top, and therefore the pot never actually touches the actual smooth glass top. It's always a little bit raised, but your cooking might be somewhat compromised. I don't think you're going to do that.
I don't think it works. I think that there are special pots that have to actually touch.
No, that's induction. That's something else. Induction can be kashered. Induction can be kashered with hot water. That's a different story. This is not induction. This is coil, electric coils underneath the smooth glass top. Yes. Let's move on.
I have a gas grill. The bottom gas range. I'm sorry. The bottom is glass.
That doesn't make a difference. Then the gas. You have regular burners on top of it, correct?
Yeah.
Regular burners. Yeah.
Yeah. So then regular burners get kashered, and the pot sits on the burner and just cover the area in between.
Cover the area in between. Yeah.
That's not a problem, because it's not. Again, the only problem is where the heat comes from underneath it, under the glass. Then it spreads, and if you cover it, it's going to break. But here, the regular gas comes over the glass, then it's not going to ruin your glass.
So if the pot is risen a little bit above the coils.
Yeah, above the stovetop, there's no problem.
Amashu.
Then there's no problem because it never touches the glass. Uh-huh. There might be another solution. Itzi, we'll talk with you after the shear. Okay, so that's the stovetop. That's the grates, things like that. Okay, barbecue grills is really hard.
The knobs.
The knobs. Yeah. The knobs don't need to kasha. Just clean them and that's it. Doesn't need anything else because you just need to, clean it and that's it. Now, you have to be careful. The back of the stovetop. Many times your pots touch the back of the stovetop. You know what's that called? The backsplash. It touches that many times because your pot goes over to the end. On Pesach, your pot is going to touch that. It's the same thing as touching a chametz dikka area. So therefore, you should really cover that part. Now, if you have these old-fashioned ovens, nobody has them anymore today, where the vent is over. Don't cover the vent, obviously. If you have a regular stone backsplash, at least the part where the pot can touch, just cover that part. Or you can kasher it, technically speaking. When we do hagolas, when we do kashering, we'll discuss that as well. But just be careful that the pot doesn't touch that part, because that's also touching the chametz stick area, and that potentially can be a problem.
So but basically, Rabbi, if the outside is what's touching, how does that compromise the food that's inside?
Because in halacha, we say that if there's any type of connection between a wet pot, two pots not, but a wet two pots that touch each other, and there's any type of liquid connection connecting these two pots, then we say that the taste of the inside of one pot travels through the liquid into the other pot. So too over here. If your wall is chametz dik, because the previous pot touched it and it was a little moist on the outside, and then we say the taste of your chametz dik pot went through the liquid into the wall, and now you're going to do the same with a Pesach dik food, it's going to absorb back the taste from the wall through the liquid as a medium into your pot. Even if it's the inside, outside, it doesn't make a difference. It goes right through the pot, and that's why a pot has to be kashered inside and out, because the food goes through it, because it's the whole pot. That's the way it works.
What about the vent on top of the stove, like the hood?
So the vent on top of the hood. So the truth is, me'ikar hadin, it's probably too far away to say that the zeya, the steam, falls back in. But you should, by the way, it's very easy. What I do every year is I take out, you know, this is usually made out of two things. You take them out, you clean them because it's very dirty and you don't want that to fall back in. Technically speaking, cleaning is good enough. In my house, I always like to put silver foil over there. And my wife says, why? I said, because we kasher the whole kitchen. It doesn't look like Pesach. There's no silver foil anywhere. I kasher everything meticulously. So to make it look a little bit like Pesach, my kids should know that something's got to be covered. So we cover the hood. But me'ikar din, you don't really need to cover the hood because it's too far away, generally speaking. And therefore, you should clean it, take out that piece. You'll see it's very easy. You just wash it with soap and water, and you can clean it very easily. Me'ikar din is not really a connection.
Marisain.
Yeah, well, something. If you want to, you know, the kids should know that there's something to say. Anyway, that's the halacha with that. Now, regarding a barbecue grill, it's very hard to kasher it. I don't really recommend it. Somebody told me, Rabbi, I heard you said that you can kasher barbecue grills. I gave one person a heter, and that's why you got to be careful. I gave one person a heter in a specific situation, and word already went around town. The rabbi said you can kasher barbecue grills. You could technically kasher barbecue grill. The problem is that you need libun chomer on the grates, because grates, the food sits on top. Food with chametz, with a sauce and marm. You know, it marinates in that. So clearly, it's chametz chomer. What?
And buns
and everything, correct. She need libun chamur. So how you can do libun chamur in the grates? Impossible to libun chamur in the grates. Not good enough just to turn to the highest. So they say you put charcoal on both sides. So I told this person, if you change your grates, you get new Pesach dikka grates completely. And you clean out the whole inside. And the cavity you kasher with libun, putting onto the highest for about 45 minutes and an hour. And then there's a problem with the food always touches the edge. With the grates hit the barbecue. He said, no, I only use the barbecue twice and never touch it. I said, okay, you can find a heter. But most of us who we're not that careful and the food touches the side, you need to blowtorch the side. Where it touches the side, you need to change grates. Therefore, I do not recommend to kasher barbecues. to manage a week without barbecues, lo sof alam, not the end of the world, even in today's current climate. Warming drawers, again, the problem with warming drawers is it gets above 110 degrees. So it's yatsa lettuce boy. So you need libun kal. You can do libun kal in a warming drawer. How can you do libun kal in a warming drawer? It doesn't go up than 220 degrees. So it doesn't make sense. So somebody told me that one of the kashrut organizations says you put one of these, these smorgasbord fires they put underneath the chafets, underneath these dishes. What are they called? You know what I'm talking about? The sterno, exactly.
Chafing dishes.
Yeah, chafing dishes, sterno. So somebody said, oh, you put a sterno inside a warming drawer and that kashes it. I don't believe that a sterno you put inside a warming drawer reaches 550 degrees. It doesn't make sense. The whole thing is suspect. I say, clearly, you cannot kasher a warming drawer. A George Foreman grill, you cannot kasher. Pyrex, Corel, pans, all these things go in the fire, need to be kasher with fire. You cannot kasher that. Hot plates.
What if the warming drawer can reach 450?
Not good enough.
Not good enough.
Not good enough. At least 500 or 550. And if, by the way, maybe 450. I don't think 450 is. And by the way, if that's a warming drawer that you use for Dovet, if that's a warming drawer that you use for Shabbos, then you cannot use it for Shabbos. If you use it for, it comes to 450, that's not a warming drawer. That's an oven. So that's like putting it in an oven.
It has a baking function in it. So it's you set it low as a warming drawer, but then it could also be set higher if you want.
So how is it different than an oven that you can set at 220?
It's not.
Okay, so then how can you use it as a warming drawer on Shabbos?
Because the setting, the knob basically has a warming setting.
Got it. Okay, we'll talk about that. Anyway, I think the Libun Kal needs to be 550 or at least the highest temperature can go. Let me think about it. It's debatable.
What about a Shabbos urn kettle? You know,
we're going to get to that. Avram, we're going to get to that. Now, the hot plates is an issue. Generally speaking, we say hot plates is the same thing. Hot plates, it needs to go through Libun Kal because it's fire. And therefore, you have to raise it to 500 degrees. You can't do that. So hot plates, technically, you should get a new one for Pesach. However, especially this year where you don't want to go outside, you don't want to get yourself a hot plate, you're at home, what are you going to do? Shabbos is coming up. So I suggest if you clean it well, the hot plate, and you put it onto the highest for about 45, half an hour, 40 minutes, and you double cover it with silver foil, meaning you put silver foil, double, either extra heavy duty silver foil, but you double cover it, and that's not going to ruin the effect of the hot plate because it's just as hot through silver foil. It works very well. So if you double cover your hot plate after you cleaned it and turn it on to the highest, I don't see a problem with that, and you can use your chametzika hot plate on Pesach.
What about putting a tin, those pans, those thin, that elevates.
No. It has to be double covered because if something falls in, it's chametz gomer. It needs libun chomer. It needs libun kal. You're not doing libun kal. So at least you clean it out well.
There's no contact of the pot or pan to the thing.
If something drips on top of it from your pan, you're done. Therefore, you have to double cover it. And the reason why I say that double cover it, because it's not like something else. I'm not telling you to double cover an oven. Double cover a hot plate. That's very normal. You can double cover a hot plate. It doesn't lose its efficacy. That's perfectly fine. So if you want to use the hot plate, the chametzik hot plate, clean it, put it onto the highest for 40 minutes, and double cover it. It works just as well, and you have your hot plate for Pesach. If you have your Pesachitik hot plate, for sure that's good. Okay, that's regarding the ovens and the Libun aspect. Let's go to the next aspect, Hagola. So Hagola is something where the absorption came about not through fire, but rather it was cooked in it or through water, and the chametz, hot chametz fell on it, etc., etc. So when the first rule of Hagola, and that's very important, is you have to wait 24 hours. It has to be Eina Ben Yoimai. It has to use 24 hours. Tomorrow night in the Hagola Shir, Hagola's Kalim, we'll discuss that a little bit more. But today, in the practical aspect, we're talking about pots and pans, we'll talk about tomorrow. Cutlery, we'll talk about tomorrow. I don't want to talk about that now. Tomorrow we'll talk about how to kasher my cutlery or my bechers or my pots and pans. If I have to use pots and pans for Pesach, we'll discuss that tomorrow shir. Tonight I want to talk about kashering the kitchen aspect, which is the sinks, and the countertops. So this, let's start with the sinks. The sinks, usually it's done through irui. All the absorption in the sinks come about through pouring of the stuff from the hot pot into my sink. So I have to kasher the sink with hot water. Doesn't have to be with fire, but it has to be done with hot water. How do I kasher my sink with hot water? So it depends what type of sink I have. If I have a porcelain or enamel sink, that cannot be kashered. Clean it, and you have to get yourself an insert. There's no choice. Itzi, is that you? Oh my gosh, I feel bad for you. If it's porcelain or enamel, it cannot be kashered. You have to get yourself, clean it. Do you know what? The advantage is you don't have to use hot water. You don't have to make a whole mess. You have to clean it with soap and clean it well. Maybe you should pour a little hot water in case something happens and it rips through or it backs up. But you should you have to cover it. How do you cover a sink? It's a problem. Get yourself an insert. If you don't have an insert, then get yourself like the old fashioned, like they did back in the Heim in Cleveland. You put silver foil all over the sink. You know, it doesn't look pretty, but that's what it did back then. You have to cover your sink. By the way, I do want to mention something else, and I heard about it this year, and my brother-in-law in Lakewood always told me that like that, and it makes sense. And therefore, I would suggest people to do that in general, that, you know, the sink, the faucet or the drain coming in the sink, there's a pipe coming down that goes like this, right? The pipe always has a curve. It doesn't just go straight down and disappears, but it goes like this, a little bit, about 6 inches down of the sink, it goes like this. And many times you have pieces of food that get stuck over there in that, you know, 3-4 inches down from the sink. And therefore, sometimes if you the sink gets backed up, the water comes back up and you had your macaroni over there, and that's going to make your whole sink chametzik on Pesach. So what they do, which makes sense in Lakewood, they told me to do that, but I see now other poskim are saying to do that as well, is before you do anything on your sink, when you clean your sink, pour a little bleach or ammonia, not together because you can cause a big explosion, but pour some ammonia down the drain or some bleach down the drain like this, then whatever is there becomes pogum. If it becomes pogum, b'dievet, it might still be okay. So that's in general, pour down a little bit ammonium or bleach down the drain like this. You know, if there's any noodle stuck over there, that's not going to come back up on Pesach. But bottom line is, if you have an enamel or porcelain sink, then you have a problem. Then you really have to cover that because you cannot kasher that. It's klicheris, it cannot be kashered. If you have a stainless steel sink, you can kasher the sink. How do you kasher the sink? So the way you have to kasher the sink is you have to pour boiling, bubbling hot water over every part of the sink. Now, again, you have to wait 20, make sure it's clean. You have to clean it well. Then wait 24 hours. After the sink is cleaned, wait 24 hours or pour some ammonia down the drain, of course, and you clean it. The entire sink is clean. You wait 24 hours and then you kasher it. How do you kasher it?
Rabbi, when you say you wait 24 hours, you can't even use it for cold?
You can use it for cold. You cannot use it for hot. No okay. Hot water can come on the sink in those 24 hours. Because if you use hot water, then whatever chametz is inside the walls of the sink comes back out and makes the sink no good. So that's not good. So therefore, you have to wait 24 hours. It's pogum. And now you can kasher your sink. How do you kasher your sink? You have to take a kettle or a pot, fill it up with water, bubble it. And while the water is boiling and bubbling, you have to pour it over every spot of the sink, which is you have to take. Now, for example, I put an example over here. This is my kashering pot, kettle. If you have them, Variety, I'm sure, sells them. Maybe even the farm store sell them. They deliver. You can get that. You don't have to use such a pot. You can use a kettle, or you can use a, by the way, you can either use a chametz dikah pot that wasn't used 24 hours, or you can use a Pesach dikah pot. Doesn't make a difference. Either one you can use, filled up with water. While it's bubbling, you pour it over every spot of the sink. Very important. You cannot pour it in one part and have it run down to the other parts of the sink. It has to come directly from the pot, directly in every spot of the sink. So you have to go very carefully, you know, like this, like this, like this, like this, and like this, you kasher every part of the sink. In years past, I've always said that the better way, some people say it's like a kli rishon, use a brick that's in the fire, that you have these kashering sets, This sits in the fire, and then you take the water and you pour it over it, and it goes triple as fast because it spreads over the entire width of the brick. So it goes much faster, and halachically it's also better because it's considered a kli rishon, it's considered the fire itself. So if you do it like this, and you pour it over every part of the sink, including the sides, it's much faster, much easier, and much better. However, this year, when nobody can get a hold of it, and nobody wants to go out and get it, then you can definitely be makel and just use the kettle or the pot and hit every part of the sink. Part of the sink means the sides, the bottom, the faucet, also the faucet. You can do the faucet also. And you should even do the faucet while the hot water is running from the sink. At the end, you pour the hot water over it, and then the steam combines with both together, and it cleans the faucet as well. You should get, and this is important, you should get a, even if you kashered it, it's better if you get one of these sink racks on the bottom. You go any hardware store, sells a sink rack, doesn't have to exactly fit, it's only Pesach, and then your plate sit on that, so then it's easier. Even if you didn't kasher exactly perfect, but you had a sink rack, that the pots sit on top of that. Also, the...
The base is the easiest pot to be kashered.
You're right. But get a sink rack, then it's less of a shaila.
The problem is more on the side.
Okay, you can do the sides also. It's harder to do the sides, I agree. That's why if you have a sink rack, it's easier because then it doesn't really touch the sides. But you can do the sides also. If you're careful, you do it slowly, you know, you do that. That's all you really need to do. And that's on the sinks. And also the sides and also the faucet. You don't have to change the aerator, what's that called? The thing on top of the sink. You don't have to change that. Pour hot water over it. That's also fine. The thing on the bottom, obviously the part that's attached to the sink, you clean and you pour hot water over that. That's fine. But sometimes they have these very fine, thin ones that you can take out. So you should take them out and change them with the Pesach one. Because the one with the very fine holes cannot really be kashered. So the sieve, you know, the bottom that holds all the food, that should really be Pesach dikka one. Or don't have one for Pesach, but don't use the chametz dikka one because it's much harder to kasher because it's tiny little holes. That is regarding the sink. Regarding the countertop, so the same would apply with the countertop. The countertop also, if you have, Itzi, is this for you? If you have Formica countertops, cannot kasher.
You can't kasher. Of course not. There's nothing in my house that can be kashered. I'm taking that as a given.
If you have Formica countertops, you cannot kasher it.
Rivka's already told me she's just going to wrap me up in foil.
If you have Formica countertops, it cannot be kashered. If you have a granite or stainless steel or Caesar stone or quartz or any type of stone, you can kasher that. You can even wood, by the way, you can kasher if there's no cracks in it and it's smooth. But any type of something which is smooth and in one piece is without cracks, you can kasher that. The same way you'd kasher your sink, the same way you do it with the hot water, boiling water, you pour it over every part. Now, again, I have my brick that I pour over and the bits brick sits in the fire and the pot sits on the fire. And then I take it and it's poured over the brick and it spreads out all over and it's fantastic and it's great. And I'm doing it for years already. And every year, as I get older, I tell myself, you know what? Do I really need the entire countertop kashered? It makes such a mess with all this water. And every year I cover more of the countertop and I leave just a little bit over for my wife to cook or to prepare the food comfortably on the granite countertop. So my suggestion to you is spare yourself the headache. If you need a little bit kashered, by all means, better to kasher a little bit of the countertop with the boiling hot water well and cover the rest than to try and do everything and you make such a mess and it's such a balagan and it's just not worth it. As we get older, we see maybe our parents and grandparents were not so wrong. They used to cover it. It's so much easier. Today you cover it with all that. You know, they have these white things, what's that called? These corrugated plastics or whatever it is. Or any way you want to cover it, the silver foil. It's just simply easier. You don't want to do that? Bevakasha, gezunta heit. You can kasher it. Again, you don't need to use the brick. If you don't have the brick, though it's easier and it's halachically better, you can use a kettle as well and pour over every part of it. As long as you hit every part without it running from one part to the other part, you have to hit every part of it, and that's how you kasher the countertop. As a good suggestion, even if you kasher the countertop, it's inevitable you're not going to do it perfect. So just to calm everybody down, if you never put a hot pot directly on the countertop on Pesach, You'll always put a piece of paper in between, then you're good, you know, even if you didn't kasher it perfectly. I wouldn't rely on that, but it's something that you can definitely back yourself up on, and definitely don't put hot food on the countertop. That is regarding the countertop and the sinks. Any question on that?
You have to double cover it, or just single cover is fine?
Single cover is fine. Double covering is just in case it rips open. That's the only reason why. Yes, Jeff.
On the faucet itself, so yeah. Where do you pour the water?
You pour the water over the faucet.
Over the top or over where the water comes out?
I mean, you can do both. If you can turn it over, do you do both? If you can't, just do it on the top. But okay. then let the water run through hot water, then it mixes together the water from the bubbles with the thing together with the hot water. Now, people ask me every year, could you kasher with one of those steam machines? And every year I tell the same thing, no, you cannot, because you have to kasher with water, hot water, 212 degree water or 210 degree water, 200 degree water actually, bubbling, but not with steam. So they tell me, Rabbi, it's not steam, it's always water because it becomes wet. And I always say, I don't know what it is. I'm not sure. Somebody told me this year, oh, the Star K allows it. I actually read the article from Rabbi Heinemann this afternoon, and he writes very clearly that, yes, if you have a steam machine that produces water, 212 degree water, then you can do that. He says, however, from all the machines he has seen, he has not yet found a steam machine that produces water, but rather it produces steam. And even if the steam is more than 212 degrees, it's capturing the steam. It's a big machlekes, and it should not be done. So again, I don't have any real solution for that. By the way, what you could do, by the way, is you can use the steam machine where you have a thin layer of water on your countertop, and then you take a hot iron and you iron it. So then you're bubbling the water that's sitting on your countertop. I wouldn't advise it. Not a worthwhile thing to do. Remember, you're not going to have a plumber coming to fix your countertops that you burnt or who knows what. It's not advisable, but that's maybe a solution from a halachic perspective. Again, you know, it's not the end of the world. We cover it a little bit, you know, kasher less and do it right and cover more. You're probably better off than trying to kasher the whole thing.
The iron might be dangerous because it's
electric. It might be dangerous also. Correct. So I'm not sure how that works. I'm just telling you what's out there and what's written in all the books. Okay. Any questions on the kashering of the actual kitchen? The pots and the pans, not the pots and pans, we'll do that tomorrow. But the sinks and the faucets and the countertops and all that stuff. Any questions? Okay, let's finish up. Hadacha v'shifshuf. Back on the sheet. All these, you know, different things that we find. How do you kasher that? How do you clean that? So again, microwave ovens we went through already. Baby high chair. Usually the tray should be covered because it's full of chametz and treif and everything else. It should be covered. By the way, somebody has small children, generally we get them new bottles for Pesach. Because even the small children, if it sat in the chametz and it got cooked in the chametz, etc., then it got cleaned in the dishwasher. You use the same bottles, the same bottle that they drink from. It should not really be used. But if the baby, by the way, the baby drinks formula and it's kidneyous, then it should not be washed in your sink, but rather it should be washed in the bathroom sink. I forgot to mention one more thing. Glass used for kol. People are making Pesach the first time this year, and they don't have any glasses for Pesach, right? Okay, they can buy disposable, but they want to have regular glasses for the Seder. Could they use chametz dikah glasses? So the truth is, I'm thinking this year that since it's b'di'evet and we have to try and find a kula, so glasses, even though if it was only used for colds, not hot mugs, but glasses has always been used for colds. Even though you put it in a dishwasher, but you technically can kasher that because the evet we hold, we go both to reif tashmishon. And therefore, if you have no glasses and it's only used for cold, you can technically kasher the glass. How do you kasher glasses? It's a cooler, but you can rely on it if you have nothing else. If you put it inside cold water and 3 days, you know, you fill up your tub or you fill out the bucket and you put in your glass, submerge it in cold water, 24 hours. And after 24 hours, you change the water and put in new water. And then you do that for another 24 hours. And the third 24 hours, you put in another new water, and that's how you, it's called milui v'irui. You fill up the glass and you rinse it off every 24 hours. You do this for 3 days. Glass, which has only been used for cold, or mostly been used for cold, you have no glass for Pesach, you can use it as well this year. But I would not wash that glass with hot water in my Pesach Dikah sink. I'll just use it with cold water and wash it with cold because I don't want the bleias of glass to come out through hot water. Any questions on that?
And again, that's even if you never put it in your dishwasher, even if it was only used for cold, meaning you never put it in the dishwasher because it wasn't dishwasher.
Then for sure you can do milui v'irui. I'm saying even if you're using your dishwasher every now and then, or even regularly you put in dishwasher, you can probably rely on it bismana in today's situation where you can go out and get yourself new glasses, then you can rely on that. That's a heta I'm giving. I think that's a good heta. That's, by the way, milui v'irui. On glassware, used only for cold or mostly for cold. Pyrex, Corel, and all that stuff is used in the oven. Oven to table, that obviously cannot be kashered. You need libun chamur, and that's not going to work. Back to our hadach of a shifshuf. So baby high chair we spoke about. Candlesticks or the tray does not need to be kashered. The minute is they throw some hot water over it. It does not need to be kashered. As long as it's clean, it's fine. Again, do not, if you wash it in your chametz dikah sink during the year, I would not wash it in my Pesach dikah sink with hot water during Pesach. But it does not have to be kashered. Braces, there's actually a question about braces because people are machmeh who wear braces not to eat hot chametz within 24 hours of Pesach. Why? Because they say the taste goes inside the braces and not really cleaning it. After 24 hours, it's all pogum because the mouth is so, foul smelling. There's so many chemicals and what's that called? The gases in the mouth. So it all becomes pogum. But some are machmir, not to eat hot chametz within 24 hours. Hot chametz, it means a hot pizza. Hot meat is fine. Hot chicken is fine. But hot chametz, hot pizza, within 24 hours, some are machmir.
Dentures,
same thing. I take a much more liberal view on this because I think whatever you eat something, it's never going to be more than 110 degrees, right? Because otherwise you can't eat it. It's too hot. So as long as it's not boiling hot, then it's already not yatza lettuce boy, and it will be okay. Shelves in the kitchen and cabinets, we discussed it already. Oven hoods, we discussed. Under the fridge or oven, you could be makel this year. If you're not going to open it up, you're not going to get there. You just mevatel it. Refrigerator, freezer, we say you don't have to line it. Better if I line something, I'd rather line the fridge because I put a hot pot in there. Sometimes tables just need to be cleaned. You don't have to double cover your tables, but you should if you have a table that always sits like this. You have a granite table in the kitchen or a glass table, then you make sure you clean it and you always have a tablecloth on Pesach, maybe even a plastic tablecloth, then it doesn't seep through and it doesn't absorb. You're not going to kasher your table, so then just make sure it's always covered on Pesach or don't put anything hot on it and make sure it's always covered, which means if you have a glass table in your kitchen, then a minik is to cover that on Pesach because after you put something hot, you don't want to put something hot on that same table, but you don't have to kasher that. Towels and tablecloth, you do not need to have Pesach Dikah towels or Pesach Dikah dish towels or Pesach Dikah tablecloth. You do not need to have that. You can have your regular tablecloth. However, you should wash it. Make sure there's no pieces of chametz attached to it. And you should wash it in a wash machine on a hot temperature or a warm temperature. And I guess it's with soap and at least 120 degrees, 110 degrees is washed. And that's good enough. And you don't have to get separate towels and tablecloth. Actually, somebody asked me the following question. And he asked me, he said, I usually have a hard plastic that sits on top of my tablecloth. Could I use the same hard plastic on Pesach on top of my tablecloth? And the answer, of course, is no, because that's not something that you can wash. So hard plastic is the same thing as glass that needs to be kashered. You're not kashering it. So how can you use heavy plastic tablecloth that sits on your chametz dikah table the whole year, and your cholent falls on top of it, and your matzah bowl is going to fall on top of the same hard plastic tablecloth without kashering in between, that's going to be a problem. It's after 24 hours already. It's after 6 months. It doesn't make a difference. Nice and tam livgam is a problem on Pesach as well. So therefore, use a regular tablecloth or get a disposable plastic that you put on top new, or use the regular tablecloth as long as they have been washed with soap and water. There's no problem. Blender food processors are problematic because it's hard to clean them, and the plastic bowl, technically you could maybe get a new bowl and you kasher the blade. We'll discuss that tomorrow. Water urn is always a big question. Again, better to get a water urn, a separate one for Pesach. If it's late and you can't get that and you can't order it, if it's a water urn that's only used for water, and maybe sometimes you put some, you'll take it and you pour it over the chalent or something because you want to add some hot water to the chalent or something like that, you know, you could kasher it. How do you kasher it? If you fill it up all the way to the top and you put it on till it boils, now that's going to be a little harder because you have to actually flow it over, especially if sometimes you touch something on the outside, if something spritzes on the outside, the chalent spritzes on the outside, something spritzes on the outside. So then what you should do is either take this brick or take a brick that was in the fire from your garden, or you don't have to do that. You can get one of these metal hangers from the cleaners, you know, the shirt hangers from the cleaners. You put that inside on your stovetop on the fire till it becomes very hot, and you take gloves while you hold it. And while it's hot, after your kettle is filled up to the top and it's boiling, you take the hanger, you put it inside, and you'll see that all the water will spritz full over on the sides, overflow on the sides, and that's how you kashered your urn. And make sure you do that, and also pour hot water over the spout while the water is running out of it, so you kashered your urn. This works for metal urn for sure. It might even work for plastic urn as well. The only issue is if you have every Shabbos, you put your challah on top of your plastic cover, which, by the way, your cover also has to be kashered. If you put your challah on top of your urn, that might be a separate shiloh, because then it's like it's cooking on the, you know, the heat of the urn. It goes into the challah and it goes back into the urn. Then call me up. We'll discuss how to kasher that water urn. Graters, impossible to kasher. Colanders, metal, yes. Plastic, no. Dishwasher, I'm against kashering dishwashers. I know some books say yes. The reason why I'm against it, because I was in Staten Island. I had a friend of mine who had an electronics store, and he said, I opened up dishwashers all the time. I'm also a mechanic. And whenever I open a dishwasher, I find in the guts of the dishwasher noodles and food and bread and stuff like that. And you're going to cook it, and sometimes even edible. You're going to have a dishwasher run its cycle, and it's going to, it's going to make everything chametz, and it's not good. So whenever you have a chance, tell people you cannot kasher a dishwasher. Nevertheless, there are those that are matir to kasher a dishwasher. Call me up if it's really important. Again, we're not going to have that many guests. We're not going to have 20 people at a table, not even 10 people. We have just our immediate family, nucleus of our family this Pesach. There's not so many dishes to do. I don't see why there's a need really to kasher a dishwasher this Pesach. Warming drawers, set it ready. What was that?
Sorry. Back to the food processor. If I had a food processor that I use all year round, but I have new bowls and blades, can I use the bowl and blade that I never used before on the base of the?
Yes, but you have to. Yes, but not on a challah maker. It's not going to work because a lot of dough over there. But if it's just on the mechanics, yes, I don't see why not.
It's call just up, a food processor.
Me, that should be okay. Program. That should be okay. Call me up after the shiur. Call me tomorrow. I just want to make sure that we have the exact details right, but it should be okay. Waffle iron, frying pan, obviously you cannot kasher. Pasta maker, toaster oven, all these things are full of chametz. You cannot really kasher that. A toaster oven, maybe yes. If you have a toaster oven that needs a kasher, you can tell exactly what to do. You have to really clean that well. And you have to do libun kal. I'm not sure if you can do the libun kal in a toast oven. Depends what type of toast oven there are. Crock pot cannot be kasher. That's kli cheres. Coffee makers, problematic. Your kurach machine, problematic. Especially if you had decaffeinated coffee going through it. It can be done, perhaps. Call me up after the shiur. It's a specific detail how to do
What's
it.
What's the problem?
The coffee maker, if you have something, the decaffeinated, well, that's just kidneys. That's not a problem. But if you have the, you know, if you have a Keurig machine, or if it's not a Keurig machine, the other ones, you know, like the old-fashioned coffee makers, that sits in the chametz sticker dishwasher. That clearly, you know, where you take the pot, you take it off.
The curing.
The Keurig machine. Keurig machine might, yes, be able to be kashered. I have to double check. I'm not
what
sure.
What has to be kashered there?
Just the spout. We went through. You made hot cocoa and stuff like that. You know, I mean,
if it's only coffee, you got these
pods and only coffee.
Only coffee. I mean,
yeah, maybe. Call me up. We'll discuss it. The benches we discussed already. The hot plate we discussed already. The Shabbos blech. It will be the same as the hot plate. If you really have nothing else, I would clean it completely, but then I have to double wrap it with silver foil because again, hot food chametz sits on top of it. there's no problem double wrapping with silver foil. It's just another layer to the blech. So again, it would be the same like the hot plate. Dish racks might be a problem because the dishes sit in it, the chametz dikah dishes, you would get a special Pesach dikah dish racks. If you have no way to get to a hardware store, you don't want to get a Pesach dikah dish rack, then don't use a dish rack. Who says you have to use a dish rack? You can just put it on top of the countertop, on top of a towel. Lo nora, not the end of the world. Washing cup, meikar adin, you don't need a separate washing cup. If you want to get one, if you don't want to use it, I would, maybe if it's metal, you can for sure kasher it. If it's not metal, depends where it sits. If it always sits in the chametz, then don't put it this time in the chametz. Don't put it inside your Pesach dikah sink. But technically, just to wash your hands would not really be a problem. Brooms and sponges, don't forget. The bottom of the broom needs to be checked because many times you have a lot of chametz over there. Now, it might be bottle, it probably is bottle, but if you're going to sweep your floor on Pesach and your little child is going to go and eat from the floor or something like that, not such a good idea. Just make sure there's no pieces of chametz on the bottom of the sponge or the bottom of the brooms. The sponges used to wash the dishes should be Pesach dikah sponges, definitely not chametz dikah sponges. That's obvious. It's hot and there's chametz over there. That cannot be used. Play-Doh is chametz. For some reason, I don't know why I have it on the sheet over here from years ago. Play-Doh is chametz. It's just regular dough. Should be sold with the chametz. Pet food. Paper plates are okay. Plastic plates, paper towels. It's all good. There's no shiloh whatsoever. It's nifsa machilas kelef. And all the plastic coverings is also fine. Maybe some of them to say there's starch in it. I'm not really sure what that means. I don't think it's edible. Starch from the cleaners is definitely not a problem. Maybe the what's the name? The gloves maybe have starch in them. I don't know really what that means. Not edible. I don't think it's such a problem. Pet food, that can be a problem. Pet food is chametz dik, and you cannot serve your pets chametz on Pesach. That's a problem. You cannot have hanah from chametz on Pesach. And therefore, make sure your pet food has no chametz on it. If it has chametz, then you cannot use it. What are you going to give your pet? Whatever you give yourself to eat, you give your pet to eat. No, not the end of the world. Fish food, they speak to, call me up. I know there's somebody in the shul who has fish. He's a big expert on fish. And I'll call him up and tell him exactly which fish food to use for Pesach. You cannot serve chametz to your pets. I think we covered more or less everything. Any questions on what we discussed tonight, or any questions in general on the kitchen and the kashering?
I have a question. Sorry, it's not so much about kashering as it is about like products. I just was wondering if I have something that I use all year round, but it's kosher for Pesach. Can I use it on Pesach? Like, let's say cinnamon.
So it depends. It depends what it is. Well, it's good. It's a good question, and I don't want to give a blanket statement on that. It's spices, for example. If it have to be kosher Pesach, it depends what. If it's whole spices, maybe not. If it's ground, it probably has to be kosher Pesach because they put sometimes preservatives or they mix it with other things. You know, legally you're allowed to mix it with other things, whatever it is. But let's say it's a kosher Pesach spice, but I use it the whole year. It depends. If I take the spice and I pour it right over my cholent every time, then the taste of the cholent and steam goes right into my spice. So that's no good. You know what I mean? But somebody called me up and asked me, he said, no. Every time I use spices, I take the spice, I pour it into a spoon, and I pour the spoon into the cholent. I said, then it's fine. It depends, and every case is different. If you have, you know, cinnamon sticks that you have in your thing, and cinnamon sticks is kosher Pesach, it's fine. And I always take with my dirty hands full of chametz, and I move around, and I touch 10 of them till I take one of them, that could be a problem. If it's not like that, then yes, you can use it.
Rabbi, I have a cold... One of the Nestle water coolers. What do we do with that?
Yeah, Nestle water coolers. So cold is definitely not a problem. Hot, I would just kasher that. Meaning I would let hot water run through it and pour some hot water over it, over the spout, and that should be fine. If it's always used for water, I don't really see the issue with it. Maybe if you have, sometimes you put, most people don't do that. Right, they put a chunk right underneath it. Of course not. The Shabbos, you can't do that.
I just use it for cold water or hot water for tea and for coffee. That's it.
Right. So then tea and a coffee. Well, but sometimes you're worried that maybe the taste of the decaffeinated coffee, which is hummus or kidney.
No decaf in this house, Rabbi.
Okay, but if yes, so I would say you can use it if you. It's better probably if you use a new water tank for Pesach because you don't want the same water to go through it. That was absorbed inside that big water thing. If you use a new water tank and you kasher it by pouring the hot water over it and you let it run through it, for 10 seconds with hot water running through it, they go through the compartment, then it'll be okay.
And should the hot water tap be covered?
I just told you, you can use the hot water cap.
Use that one, okay.
Yeah, but run through it hot water beforehand, kasher it, pour some hot water over it, and change the water tank itself. The water, you know, bottle.
And abusing on Yom Tov would be a problem or no? Not the hot water, the cold water.
Cold water is permitted on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Right. Hot water is a problem.
Yom Tov is a problem too.
Yom Tov would be probably okay. It depends on everything. I think it's probably okay to use that hot water Yom Tov. Don't quote me on it. Let me look through it. Make sure I get the mechanics right. I think it will be okay, the hot water thing on Yom Tov as well. I have to double check. Call me up. I'll make sure that's correct.
Good.
Just repeat the part about the urn quickly. We only use it for water.
Only use it for water. Then all you need to do is fill it up with water and let it boil. And then if you can put something in it, for example, like a hot iron and a hot hanger, for example, that sat in the fire, and then you put it in it, it flows over, and then you kasher the actual thing, then it's fine. Because I'm worried that maybe, you know, something spritzed on top of it. It was in the kitchen amongst the chametz, so therefore you kasher that. But if it's only chash, you can kasher it like that. You fill it up to the top, let it boil, completely filled up. Take a brick or a hanger that sat in the fire and put it inside while it's completely boiled, and that will make the water splash over on the sides, and then you kasher your urn. On the faucet, make it run through with hot water and pour some hot water over it, and you kasher your faucet as well. You can even do that for a plastic urn, provided it was only used for water. Lester, you good?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Okay, so tomorrow night we'll continue with the shiur on the kashering Hagolas Kalim, exactly how to do it in the house, as well as Tvilas Kalim, and maybe we'll discuss some medicines as well. Have a good night to everyone.
Good night. Thank you, Rav.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.